Mr. Crivelli?
May it please this honorable court and counsel for the government. It's appropriate that this case is being argued today because the case which I feel has great bearing on it and which is cited in the Kapler decision relied upon most recently by the government was decided last week in the United States Supreme Court, and that is this court's decision in Sykes. The Supreme Court affirmed it. But in affirming it, it really showed the weaknesses which are present in the case which I'm about to argue to the court. The case I'm arguing is based on 18 U.S.C. Section 16, which, unlike ACCA and the definition of violent felony and the career criminal, has no predicate offenses. And when we look at the difference between the Supreme Court cases, Chambers, an
but
earlier decision.
You're asking us to overrule previous decisions, aren't you, of ours?
I'm sorry, Judge.
Are you asking us to overrule decisions of ours?
I'm saying to the court.
Are you asking us to overrule decisions of ours?
In other words, Wallace, Franco.
I believe that based on
Would
Sykes,
you answer my question, yes or no?
Yes. I believe I'm not.
Well, what's happened? What's happened to invalidate those decisions?
What has Sykes done here?
When you look at Sykes and Chambers, you realize that Chambers, there wasn't sufficient force just from walking away. The so-called substantial risk of violent force and injury is not there. And in Sykes, because you're using a car, it is there. We fall somewhere in between. Where do we fall?
Well,
that's
you certainly,
what Justice Scalia asks.
Well, you certainly fall here in that he forcibly held on to her body to prevent her from getting out of his vehicle. Mr. Crivelli, I think her hand's part of her body.
That's true, but then we're dealing with the categorical approach, and we shouldn't even get to that point, I believe. When we deal with the categorical approach, we don't look at the facts. And so I suggest that we have to follow
Well, was
back.
There a plea or any kind or charge or anything that some official document that describes this? The actual events?
As I point out in my brief, the record below has no indictment, no plea colloquy, nothing. All we have is the
So you want, all right, so you want us to just look at
the unlawful restraint statute.
In general.
Your Honor already knows from Kapler that there's
So what kind of restraints do you have in mind that you think are do not create a risk of violence?
I'm sorry, the case law I'm suggesting is Johnson versus United States, which says...
I'm asking you for an example. What kind of restraints do you regard as not creating a risk of violence?
Well, obviously you consider holding someone's hand
Obviously, I don't consider holding someone's hand.
No. In a moving car, I mean...
I like to phrase it like this. Wallace starts out with the potential of risk.
No, come on.
Kapler
Look,
talks
hey,
about
hey,
substantial
answer
risk.
My questions, would you please? I asked you for an example of a restraint that you would think would not create a risk of violence.
There has to. You cannot just
you
speculate.
You just can't answer my questions, right? I want an example.
An example would be a punch to the face.
Hey, come on. You're not listening to me. I want an example of a restraint that you regard as not creating a risk of violence. So you tell me a punch in the face, which is an act of violence,
is not physical violence.
That's not a restraint either. I want an example of your conception of a restraint. That is a restraint, but it doesn't involve a threat of a risk of violence.
I'd like to do that by talking about the court's cases.
Oh, my God. You are so unresponsive.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Mr. Covelli, the...
You will have to answer my question or I won't listen to you.
I will.
Right? I just treat you as defaulting. Now, give me an example. Give me an example of a restraint that does not create a risk of violence.
Mr. Clavelli, the answer is
no.
The one in your case. You don't think it's...
Give
all
me
right?
an example.
Holding the hand. Restraint by trickery.
What does restraint by trickery mean?
Well, it is not without consent. And
would you give me an example of restraint by trickery?
Apparent authority. You have
apparent You are
authority.
Hopeless. I want an example.
He's a wonderful person.
I want an example.
When a person says, come with me, we're going someplace, and gives them a false reason. That is what unlawful restraint is.
Where's the restraint? Where's the restraint?
That is unlawful restraint under the Illinois statute. I'm sorry. But it's a Class 4 felony, and it's a lesser included of kidnapping.
I don't believe you. Suppose a man says to a woman, I'd like you to come to the movies with me because this really great movie you'll enjoy. But he knows she won't enjoy it. Nevertheless, she comes with him to the theater. Now, is that restraint by trickery? Is that a violation of the statute?
No, it isn't.
All right, so give me an example of restraint by trickery that violates the statute.
It is where someone uses their authority.
Give me an example, please.
A teacher says to a student, stay after school and remain with me.
And that's a violation of the statute?
No, it would not be, because there's no
I'm asking for an example of a restraint that violates the statute but doesn't involve violence.
Well, that's the whole point of my argument. Unlawful restraint is not
Would
a violent
you give
crime.
Me an
there are none. There are none. That's the answer. There are none.
Okay. There are no restraints that don't involve violence.
Yes.
All right. You've given up your whole case, right?
I don't believe so,
of
Judge.
Of course you have. Because if there are no restraints that don't involve violence, then logically every restraint involves violence or threat of violence or risk of violence. And therefore, you know,
I don't understand.
Can I just say, I mean, harking back to what Judge Rovner was saying, I'm completely confused because I thought that your argument was that holding somebody's hand to keep them in a car was not a violent thing to do. It's a physical restraint, but holding somebody's hand to keep them in the car isn't what we usually think of as violence. Now, maybe
because
you've just told me it's wrong. You've just told me, though, that I don't know why that wasn't the first example that came to your mind when Judge Posner was asking you for an example. But, you know.
Because it's pretty nerve-wracking to stand where he's standing.
Well, it's not that, but I wanted to focus on force. There's no force, and the court has put force where there is none, in the Wallace case and in the Kapler case. And I believe that what we're dealing with is, as Justice Scalia says, we are dealing with an Illinois statute which is arbitrary and too vague. And the Section 16, unless we put a violent force element in it, is also arbitrary and too vague. And I believe that's where the decisions of the court are going. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clavelli. Mr. Harjani?
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Sunil Harjani for the appellant, the United States.
Okay, so, your turn. The Illinois statute doesn't seem to require a substantial threat of force on its face. Would you agree with that part?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so, let's think. For example, what about detention that's accomplished by deception? What if the defendant falsely says to the victim, your child has been injured, stay right here, okay? That would violate the statute, right? Wouldn't it? And yet there's no threat, right?
As long as the individual
is there a threat?
Yes.
There's a threat?
There is no threat of force in that case.
Right. So how does that affect your argument after Begay and Chambers?
Your Honor, it is actually an issue that this Court considered in CalPERS. It recognized that not every circumstance that where you can violate the statute has to involve force. But looking at the ordinary case, which is what the standard in Chambers recognized in this Court in CalPERS, the ordinary case combined with a common sense understanding of the way in which this crime occurs was enough. And that indeed is the case.
Are there any data about this?
Your Honor, we don't have any empirical research to support it. I did cite a number of Illinois cases in our brief in showing the way in which this crime has occurred, generally in rape situations or sexual assaults. I also note that in the CalPERS case, the government did submit an appendix listing 80 cases, a survey of Illinois law, the issue.
How does Sykes help or hurt you?
Your Honor, we submit the Sykes does not change the analysis in any way.
And why?
Well, first of all, Sykes only considered whether the issue of vehicular flight met the standard. And it did, and it applied true and tried precedent in Chambers and Begay to reach that conclusion. If anything, it helped our position because it recognized that that language, the purposeful language, wasn't designed to exact a more stricter standard. What it was designed to do was to compare it to negligence and strict liability when the court used the word purposeful.
Well, that really depends on how you see it. I'm not sure that Sykes in its immediate facts has much to do with it, but this is often at the Supreme Court level about the general approach they take to things. And I would say from Johnson that you'd have to take the position that there are some touchings that will involve force and other touchings that don't. And I'm not sure why holding somebody's hand is the kind of touching that ought to be equated to force.
Well, I think that issue, again, was decided by the court in CalPERS in April. And it recognized that in the categorical approach way, you consider that the way the statute is ordinary violated is by using force.
Well, and so, but the problem is, there are many applications that would not fall within the category use of force. And if it's ambiguous, then you have to say that it can't be used.
You and I would respectfully disagree. Let me take the example of burglary. This court has discussed burglary in the ACCA context many times.
Well, sure,
it doesn't necessarily have to have a confrontation.
Of course, because burglary in general, but touchings, as we know from Johnson, as we know from general experience, could be anything, you know, from the tiniest little touch to holding somebody's hand, to really grabbing their arm and bruising them, to punching them, to doing all sorts of things. There's a far greater range if you look at the common law of battery than the common law of burglary would encompass. And when you don't have any idea, when you can't tell without essentially retrying the case, then you can't use it.
Your Honor, I disagree in that respectfully because the issue is what is the substantial risk involved in the crime?
Of course. And I'm saying that with the range of burglary, there you can't categorically say that there's always a substantial risk of physical injury if the only thing you know is that there's been unlawful restraint. You know, it could be somebody saying, you know, stay here or I'll, you know, tell your wife what you've been doing, you know. There are all sorts of things.
Your Honor, you're correct. You can't commit the act by trickery.
But well, that again, wouldn't violate the Illinois law.
But this Court's precedent has been consistent on this issue, Wallace, Phillips, Franco Fernandez, and CalPERS. It has actually considered these circumstances where you could violate the statute without force or injury, but again determined that in the ordinary case, using a common sense approach, generally that does not happen. Generally, the statute is violated with physical force being used.
Let's look at this case just for a second. So he's driving with one hand, right?
That appears to be the case.
And he's holding onto her with the other hand. And we don't know how hard or how soft or...
We don't.
We don't know if he's caressing her hand while he's driving with the other hand.
We do not, Your Honor. We don't. And, Your Honor...
I mean, you've described pretty much every teenage date at this point.
Well...
I think they hold other parts.
Not necessarily. It is without lawful authority. She was detained. And I think that's where the substantial risk comes in.
You're concluding that without lawful authority. So if I make the teenage date be a 19-year-old with a 15-year-old, maybe there's a problem in your view.
No, Your Honor, I wouldn't say that. But what I would say, I think going back, though, with the first principle is key here, which is the court has used a categorical approach in analyzing this issue. So we don't look at the underlying facts unless we have a plea colloquy or something. We don't have that here. The district court didn't do that. We didn't look at the underlying facts. We looked at it as a category. That was the approach the court has taken time and time again, and that's what we did. Yes, there are situations where you can commit the crime without force, but as a category, it constitutes the violent felony. And I would say this, Your Honor, that if unlawful restraint is enough for the armed criminal career
criminal
act.
What do we know about how Illinois defines the crime? Since it's obvious from Judge Wood's questions that restraint can be effected in all sorts of ways, you know, and many hard to believe that they would be criminal, right? What do the Illinois cases say about it?
The cases overwhelmingly show the physical force was used.
But how do they define it? Do they require physical force?
They do not require physical force.
Well, what do they require?
Knowingly detaining someone without lawful
authority. Well, what does that mean? Because, you know, this notion of restraint by trickery, that can't be a crime. I don't understand.
I think it would be unlikely to be prosecuted, but I think it can occur. For example, locking someone in a room, lying to them, locking them in a room.
I'm not talking about locking someone in a room. What if it's just the example of you lure a person to a concert or something, and by a false representation, now the person is trapped, you know. She's sitting in the front row. She can't get up and leave, so she's... restrained, de facto restrained for an hour. Now, is that a violation of the Illinois statute? That'd be preposterous, right?
I agree it would be, Your Honor.
Well, is there something in a treatise or in an Illinois case which recognizes that restraint can't be interpreted literally?
There is not. We have not seen anything to that effect.
But are you saying all their cases involve some kind of forcible restraint?
Yes. In the CalPERS case, where the government submitted an appendix of cases, 80 cases involve aggressive physical force. 7 cases did not.
So do you think this is the sort of case that we ought to certify to the Illinois Supreme Court and say, what are you talking about here?
No, Your Honor.
You're talking about 10% of the cases, actually, almost.
That's a lot.
10% or what?
Well, you said 80 cases did, 7 cases didn't. So, you know, maybe 8.5%.
But, why shouldn't we certify?
What are the 7 cases?
They involved kind of the examples that I've given you, Your Honor, the tricking someone into going into a room, not letting them out. Didn't involve injury, did not involve force.
But actually locking a person in a room?
Right, or holding them in some place against their will, yes. And I'd say, Your Honor, in the answer to your question, the answer is no, we shouldn't certify it because, again, the court's jurisprudence has recognized that it doesn't have to be every case. Every conceivable case doesn't have to involve force or injury. It just has to be in the ordinary case.
And that's where I was having problems.
Exactly.
The ordinary battery case or unlawful restraint case covers a much wider range of conduct than the ordinary burglary case or the ordinary, you know, kidnapping case or something. It's just inherently a much more capacious.
May I answer your question? I see my time is up. And I would say again, I agree with you, Your Honor, but But then the analysis is actually the substantial risk of force being used in the commission of the crime. And that's where I would hang my hat on in the difference.
There seems to be a gap here because locking a person, I mean, what if you locked a person into a coffin or something and buried them?
I think that's called murder.
That would be an extremely serious form of restraint, right?
A very serious
now, would that violate the federal statute as well?
The federal statute by...
Well, is that creating a substantial risk of physical force?
In that case, Your Honor, I think it would be. You have that kind of aggressive behavior where when a person gets detained, they try to escape, and then you have that confrontation between assailant and victim, and that's where you have that substantial risk of force being used. And that's how the courts interpreted unlawful restraint.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Harjani, and thank you, Mr. Clavelli.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Has expired. And we'll move on to our third case.